Tyrion. For a long while he did not stir, but lay unmoving upon the heap of old sacks that served him for a bed, listening to the wind in the lines, to the lapping of the river at the hull. A full moon floated above the mast. "It is following me down river, watching me like some great eye." Despite the warmth of the musty skins that covered him, a shiver went through the little man. "I need a cup of wine, a dozen cups of wine." But the moon would blink before that horse and griff let him quench his thirst. Instead, he drank water and was condemned to sleepless nights and days of sweats and shakes. The dwarf sat up, cradling his head in his hands. "Did I dream?" All memory of it had fled. The nights had never been kind to Tyrion Lannister. He slept badly even on soft feather beds. On the Shy Maid he made his bed atop the roof of the cabin, with a coil of hempen rope for a pillow. He liked it better up here than in the boat's cramped hold. The air was fresher, and the river sounds were sweeter than dock snoring. There was a price to be paid for such joys, though. The deck was hard, and he woke stiff and sore, his legs cramped and aching. They were throbbing now, his calves gone hard as wood. He kneaded them with his fingers, trying to rub the ache away, but when he stood, the pain was still enough to make him grimace. "I need to bathe." His boy's clothes stank, and so did he. The others bathed in the river, but thus far he had not joined them. Some of the turtles he'd seen in the shallows looked big enough to bite him in half. "Bone snappers," Duck called them. Besides, he didn't want Lamore to see him naked. A wooden ladder led down from the cabin roof. Tyrion pulled on his boots and descended to the after deck, where Griff sat wrapped in a wolfskin cloak beside an iron brazier. The sellsword kept the night watch by himself, rising as the rest of his band sought their beds, and retiring when the sun came up. Tyrion squatted down across from him and warmed his hands over the coals. Across the water, nightingales were singing. "Day soon," he said to Griff.
"Not soon enough. We need to be underway."
If it had been up to Griff, the Shy Maid would continue downstream by night as well as day. But Yandri and Ysilla refused to risk their pole boat in the dark. The upper Roin was full of snags and sawyers, any one of which could rip out the Shy Maid's hull. Griff did not want to hear it. What he wanted was Volantis. The sellsword's eyes were always moving, searching the night for what?
Pirates? Stone men? Slave catchers?
The river had perils, the dwarf knew, but Griff himself struck Tyrion as more dangerous than any of them. He reminded Tyrion of Bronn, though Bronn had a sellsword's black humour, and Griff had no humour at all.
"Oh, I would kill for a cup of wine," muttered Tyrion.
Griff made no reply.
"You will die before you drink," his pale eyes seemed to say.
Tyrion had drunk himself blind his first night on the Shy Maid. The next day he awoke with dragons fighting in his skull. Griff took one look at him, retching over the side of the pole boat, and said, "You are done with drink."
"Wine helps me sleep," Tyrion had protested.
"Wine drowns my dreams," he might have said.
"Then stay awake," Griff had replied, implacable.
To the east, the first pale light of day suffused the sky above the river. The waters of the Roin slowly went from black to blue to match the sellsword's hair and beard. Griff got to his feet.
"The others should wake soon. The deck is yours."
As the nightingales fell silent, the river larks took up their song. Egrets splashed amongst the reeds and left their tracks across the sandbars. The clouds in the sky were aglow, pink and purple, maroon and gold, pearl and saffron. One looked like a dragon. Once a man has seen a dragon in flight, let him stay at home and tend his garden in content, someone had written once, for this wide world has no greater wonder. Tyrion scratched his scar and tried to recall the author's name. Dragons had been much in his thoughts of late.
"Good morrow, Hugo."
Septa Lamor had emerged in her white robes, cinched at the waist with a woven belt of seven colours. Her hair flowed loose about her shoulders.
"How did you sleep?"
"Fitfully, good lady. I dreamed of you again." A waking dream. He could not sleep, so he had eased a hand between his legs and imagined the scepter atop him, breasts bouncing.
"A wicked dream, no doubt. You are a wicked man. Will you pray with me and ask forgiveness for your sins?"
"Only if we pray in the fashion of the Summer Isles."
"No, but do give the maiden a long, sweet kiss for me."
Laughing, the scepter walked to the prow of the boat. It was her custom to bathe in the river every morning.
"Plainly, this boat was not named for you," Tyrion called as she disrobed. "The mother and the father made us in their image, Hugo. We should glory in our bodies, for they are the work of gods."
"The gods must have been drunk when they got to me." The dwarf watched Lamor slip into the water. The sight always made him hard. There was something wonderfully wicked about the thought of peeling the scepter out of those chaste white robes and spreading her legs. "Innocence despoiled," he thought. Though Lamor was not near as innocent as she appeared, she had stretch marks on her belly that could only have come from childbirth. Yandri and Ysilla had risen with the sun and were going about their business. Yandri stole a glance at Scepter Lamor from time to time as he was checking the lines. His small dark wife, Ysilla, took no notice. She fed some wood chips to the brazier on the afterdeck, stirred the coals with a blackened blade, and began to knead the dough for the morning biscuits. When Lamor climbed back onto deck, Tyrion savoured the sight of water trickling between her breasts, her smooth skin glowing golden in the morning light. She was past 40, more handsome than pretty, but still easy on the eye.
"Being randy is the next best thing to being drunk," he decided.
It made him feel as if he was still alive.
"Did you see the turtle, Hugo?" the scepter asked him, wringing water from her hair. "The big ridgeback?"
The early morning was the best time for seeing turtles. During the day they would swim down deep, or hide in cuts along the banks. But when the sun was newly risen, they came to the surface. Some liked to swim beside the boat. Tyrion had glimpsed a dozen different sorts, large turtles and small ones, flat backs and red ears, soft shells and bone snappers, brown turtles, green turtles, black turtles, clawed turtles, and horned turtles, turtles whose ridged and patterned shells were covered with whorls of gold and jade and cream. Some were so large they could have borne a man upon their backs. Yandri swore the Rhoynar princes used to ride them across the river. He and his wife were green blood born, a pair of Dornish orphans come home to Mother Rhoyne.
"I missed the ridgeback.
I was watching the naked woman."
"I am sad for you." Lamor slipped her robe over her head. "I know you only rise so early in hopes of seeing turtles. I like to watch the sun come up as well."
It was like watching a maiden rising naked from her bath. Some might be prettier than others, but everyone was full of promise.
"The turtles have their charms, I will allow. Nothing delights me so much as the sight of a nice pair of shapely shells."
Scepter Lamor laughed. Like everyone else aboard the Shy Maid, she had her secrets. She was welcome to them.
"I do not want to know her. I only want to fuck her."
She knew it too, as she hung her scepter's crystal about her neck to nestle in the cleft between her breasts. She teased him with a smile. Yandri pulled up the anchor, slid one of the long poles off the cabin roof, and pushed them off. Two of the herons raised their heads to watch as the Shy Maid drifted away from the bank, out into the current. Slowly the boat began to move downstream. Yandri went to the tiller. Ysilla was turning the biscuits. She laid an iron pan atop the brazier and put the bacon in. Some days she cooked biscuits and bacon, some days bacon and biscuits. Once every fortnight there might be a fish, but not today. When Ysilla turned her back, Tyrion snatched a biscuit off the brazier, darting away just in time to avoid a smack from her fearsome wooden spoon. They were best when eaten hot, dripping with honey and butter. The smell of the bacon cooking soon fetched Duck up from the hold. He sniffed over the brazier, received a swack from Ysilla's spoon, and went back to have his morning piss off the stern. Tyrion waddled over to join him. "Now here's a sight to see," he quipped as they were emptying their bladders. "A dwarf and a duck making the mighty Roin that much mightier." Yandere snorted in derision. "Mother Roin has no need of your water, Yellow. She's the greatest river in the world." Tyrion shook off the last few drops. "Big enough to drown a dwarf, I grant you. The Manda is as broad, though. So is the Trident near its mouth. The black water runs deeper."
"You do not know the river. Wait, and you will see."
The bacon turned crisp, the biscuits golden brown. Young Griff stumbled up onto deck, yawning. "Good morrow, all." The lad was shorter than Duck, but his lanky build suggested that he had not yet come into his full growth.
"This beardless boy could have any maiden in the Seven Kingdoms, blue hair or no. Those eyes of his would melt them."
Like his sire, young Griff had blue eyes, but where the father's eyes were pale, the son's were dark. By lamplight they turned black, and in the light of dusk they seemed purple. His eyelashes were as long as any woman's.
"I smell bacon," the lad said, pulling on his boots. "Good bacon," said Ysilla. "Sit."
She fed them on the afterdeck, pressing honeyed biscuits on young Griff and hitting Duck's hand with her spoon whenever he made a grab for more bacon. Tyrion pulled apart two biscuits, filled them with bacon, and carried one to Yandere at the tiller. Afterward, he helped Doc to raise the shy maid's big lateen sail. Yandere took them out into the center of the river, where the current was strongest. The shy maid was a sweet boat. Her draught was so shallow she could work her way up even the smallest of the river's vassal streams, negotiating sandbars that would have stranded larger vessels. Yet with her sail raised and a current under her, she could make good speed. That could mean life and death on the upper reaches of the Roin, Yandere claimed.
"There's no law above the Sorrows, not for 1,000 years.
And no people, as far as I can see."
He'd glimpsed some ruins along the banks, piles of masonry overgrown by vines and moss and flowers, but no other signs of human habitation.
"You do not know the river, Yellow. A pirate boat may lurk up any stream and escape slaves oft hide among the ruins. The slave catchers seldom come so far north."
"Slave catchers would be a welcome change from turtles."
Not being an escaped slave, Tyrion need not fear being caught, and no pirate was like to bother a pole boat moving downstream. The valuable goods came up the river from Volantis. When the bacon was gone, Duck punched young Griff in the shoulder.
"Time to raise some bruises. Swords today, I think."
"Swords?"
young Griff grinned.
"Swords will be sweet."
Tyrion helped him dress for the bout, in heavy breeches, padded doublet, and a dinted suit of old steel plate. Sir Rollier shrugged into his mail and boiled leather. Both set helms upon their heads, and chose blunted longswords from the bundle in the weapons chest. They set to on the afterdeck, having at each other lustily whilst the rest of the morning company looked on. When they fought with mace or blunted long axe, Sir Rolly's greater size and strength would quickly overwhelm his charge. With swords the contests were more even. Neither man had taken up a shield this morning, so it was a game of slash and parry, back and forth across the deck. The river rang to the sounds of their combat. Young Griff landed more blows, though Duck's were harder. After a while, The bigger man began to tire. His cuts came a little slower, a little lower. Young Griff turned them all and launched a furious attack that forced Sir Raleigh back. When they reached the stern, the lad tied up their blades and slammed a shoulder into Duck, and the big man went into the river. He came up sputtering and cursing, bellowing for someone to fish him out before a snapper ate his privates. Tyrion tossed a line to him. "Duck should swim better than that," he said as he and Yandere were hauling the knight back aboard the Shymaid. Sir Raleigh grabbed Tyrion by the collar. "Let us see our dwarf swim," he said, chucking him headlong into the Rhône. The dwarf laughed last. He could paddle passably well, and did, until his legs began to cramp. Young Griff extended him a pole. "You are not the first to try and drown me," he told Duck, as he was pouring river water from his boot. "My father threw me down a well the day I was born, but I was so ugly that the water witch who lived down there spat me back." He pulled off the other boot, then did a cartwheel along the deck, spraying all of them. Young Griff laughed. "Where did you learn that?" "The mummers taught me," he lied. "My mother loved me best of all her children because I was so small. She nursed me at her breast till I was 7. That made my brothers jealous, so they stuffed me in a sack and sold me to a mummer's troop. When I tried to run off, the master mummer cut off half my nose, so I had no choice but to go with them and learn to be amusing." The truth was rather different. His uncle had taught him a bit of tumbling when he was 6 or 7. Tyrion had taken to it eagerly. For half a year he cartwheeled his merry way about Castle Rock, bringing smiles to the faces of septons, squires, and servants alike. Even Cersei laughed to see him once or twice. All that ended abruptly the day his father returned from a sojourn in King's Landing. That night at supper, Tyrion surprised his sire by walking the length of the high table on his hands. Lord Tywin was not pleased.
"The gods made you a dwarf. Must you be a fool as well? You were born a lion, not a monkey."
"And you're a corpse, father, so I'll caper as I please." "You have a gift for making men smile," Septa Lamor told Tyrion as he was drying off his toes. "You should thank the Father above. He gives gifts to all his children." "He does," he agreed pleasantly. "And when I die, please let them bury me with a crossbow, so I can thank the Father above for his gifts the same way I thank the Father below."
His clothing was still soaked from his involuntary swim, clinging to his arms and legs uncomfortably. Whilst young Griff went off with Septa Lamor to be instructed in the mysteries of the faith, Tyrion stripped off the wet clothes and donned dry ones. Duck had a good guffaw when he emerged on deck again. He could not blame him. Dressed as he was, he made a comic sight. His doublet was divided down the middle. The left side was purple velvet with bronze studs, the right yellow wool embroidered in green floral patterns. His breeches were similarly split. The right leg was solid green, the left leg striped in red and white. One of Illyrio's chests had been packed with a child's clothing, musty but well made. Septa Lamor had slit each garment apart, then sewn them back together, joining half of this to half of that, to fashion a crude motley. Griff had even insisted that Tyrion help with the cutting and sewing. No doubt he meant for it to be humbling, but Tyrion enjoyed the needlework. Lamor was always pleasant company, despite her penchant for scolding him whenever he said something rude about the gods.
"If Griff wants to cast me as a fool, I'll play the game."
Somewhere he knew Lord Tywin Lannister was horrified, and that took the sting from it. His other duty was anything but foolish. "Duck has his sword, I my quill and parchment." Griff had commanded him to set down all he knew of dragon lore. The task was a formidable one. but the dwarf laboured at it every day, scratching away as best he could as he sat cross-legged on the cabin roof. Tirin had read much and more of dragons through the years. The greater part of those accounts were idle tales and could not be relied on, and the books that Illyrio had provided them were not the ones he might have wished for. What he really wanted was a complete text of the Fires of the Freehold, Galendro's History of Valyria. No complete copy was known to Westeros, however. Even the Citadel's library lacked 27 scrolls. They must have a library in Old Valenta, surely. I may find a better copy there. If I can find a way inside the black walls to the city's heart... He was less hopeful concerning Sept and Barth's dragons, worms, and wyverns, their unnatural history. Barth had been a blacksmith's son, who rose to be king's hand during the reign of Yaharis the Conciliator. His enemies always claimed he was more sorcerer than Septon. Baelor the Blessed had ordered all Barth's writings destroyed when he came to the Iron Throne. 10 years ago, Tirin had read a fragment of unnatural history that had eluded the Blessed Baelor, but he doubted that any of Barth's work had found its way across the Narrow Sea, and of course there was even less chance of his coming on the fragmentary, anonymous, blood-soaked tome, sometimes called Blood and Fire, and sometimes The Death of Dragons, the only surviving copy of which was supposedly hidden away in a locked vault beneath the Citadel. When the half-maester appeared on deck, yawning, the dwarf was writing down what he recalled concerning the mating habits of dragons, on which subject Barth, Munkin, and Tomax held markedly divergent views. Holden stalked to the stern, to piss down at the sun where it shimmered on the water, breaking apart with every puff of wind. "We should reach the junction with the Noyne by evening, Yellow," the half-maester called out. Tirin glanced up from his writing. "My name is Hugo. Yellow is hiding in my breeches. Shall I let him out to play?"
Best not. You might frighten the turtles."
Holden's smile was as sharp as the blade of a dagger. "What did you tell me was the name of that street in Lannisport where you were born, Yellow?" "It was an alley. It had no name." Tirin took a mortal pleasure in inventing the details of the colourful life of Hugo Hill, also known as Yellow, a bastard out of Lannisport. "The best lies are seasoned with a bit of truth." The dwarf knew he sounded like a Westerman, and a high-born Westerman at that, so Hugo must needs be some lordling's byblow. Born in Lannisport because he knew that city better than Old Town or King's Landing, and cities were where most dwarfs ended up, even those whelped by Goodwife Bumpkin in the turnip patch. The countryside had no grotesqueries or mummer shows, though it did have wells aplenty to swallow up unwanted kittens, three-headed calves, and babes like him. "I see you have been defacing more good parchment, Yellow." Holden laced up his breeches. "Not all of us can be half a maester." Tyrion's hand was cramping. He put his quill aside and flexed his stubby fingers. "Fancy another game of Saivas?" The half-maester always defeated him, but it was a way to pass the time. "This evening, will you join us for young Griff's lesson?" "Why not? Someone needs to correct your errors." There were four cabins on the Shy Maid. Yandri and Ysilla shared one, Griff and young Griff another. Septa Lamore had a cabin to herself, as did Holden. The half-maester's cabin was the largest of the four. One wall was lined with bookshelves and bins stacked with old scrolls and parchments. Another held racks of ointments, herbs, and potions. Golden light slanted through the wavy yellow glass of the round window. The furnishings included a bunk, a writing desk, a chair, a stool, and the half-maester's Saivas table, strewn with carved wooden pieces. The lesson began with languages. Young Griff spoke the common tongue as if he'd been born to it, and was fluent in High Valyrian,
the low dialects of Pentas, Tyrosh, Mir, and Lys, and the trade talk of sailors. The Volantine dialect was as new to him as it was to Tyrion, so every day they learned a few more words, whilst Holland corrected their mistakes. Myrinese was harder. Its roots were Valyrian as well, but the tree had been grafted onto the harsh, ugly tongue of old Gis.
"You need a bee up your nose to speak Giscari properly," Tyrion complained.
Young Griff laughed, but the half-maester only said, "Again?" The boy obeyed, though he rolled his eyes along with his Z's this time.
"He has a better ear than me," Tyrion was forced to admit, "though I'll wager my tongue is still more nimble."
Geometry followed languages. There the boy was less adroit, but Holden was a patient teacher, and Tyrion was able to make himself of use as well. He had learned the mysteries of squares and circles and triangles from his father's maesters at Castle Rock, and they came back more quickly than he would have thought. By the time they turned to history, young Griff was growing restive. "We were discussing the history of Valentus," Holden said to him. "Can you tell Yolo the difference between a tiger and an elephant?"
"Valantis is the oldest of the nine free cities, first daughter of Valeria," the lad replied in a bored tone. "After the doom, it pleased the Volantines to consider themselves the heirs of the freehold and rightful rulers of the world. But they were divided as to how dominion might best be achieved. The old blood favoured the sword, while the merchants and moneylenders advocated trade. As they contended for rule of the city, the factions became known as the Tigers and Elephants, respectively. The Tigers held sway for almost a century after the doom of Valeria. For a time they were successful. A Volantine fleet took Lys, and a Volantine army captured Mir. And for two generations all three cities were ruled from within the Black Walls. That ended when the Tigers tried to swallow Tyrosh. Pentos came into the war on the Tyroshi side, along with their Westeroshi Storm King. Bravos provided a Lyseni exile with 100 warships. Aegon Targaryen flew forth from Dragonstone on the Black Dread, and Mir and Lys rose up in rebellion. The war left the disputed lands a waste and freed Lys and Mir from the yoke. The Tigers suffered other defeats as well. The fleet they sent to reclaim Valeria vanished in the smoking sea. Cahor and Norvus broke their power on the Roine when the fire galleys fought on Dagger Lake. Out of the east came the Dothraki, driving small folk from their hovels and nobles from their estates until only grass and ruins remained, from the forests of Cahor to the headwaters of the Salhoru. After a century of war, Valantis found herself broken, bankrupt, and depopulated. It was then that the elephants rose up. They have held sway ever since. Some years the Tigers elect a triarch, and some years they do not, but never more than one. So the elephants have ruled the city for 300 years.
Just so, said Holden. And the present triarchs?
Malaco is a tiger. Nisos and Doniphos are elephants.
And what lesson can we draw from Volantine history?
If you want to conquer the world, you best have dragons.
Tyrion could not help but laugh. Later, when young Griff went up on deck to help Yandri with the sails and poles, Holden set up his Syvas table for their game. Tyrion watched with mismatched eyes and said,
"The boy is bright. You have done well by him. Half the lords in Westeros are not so learned, sad to say. Languages, history, songs, sums, a heady stew for some sellsword son."
"A book can be as dangerous as a sword in the right hands," said Holden. "Try to give me a better battle this time, Yolo. You play Syvas as badly as you tumble."
"I am trying to lull you into a false sense of confidence," said Tyrion, as they arranged the tiles on either side of a carved wooden screen.
"You think
You taught me how to play, but things are not always as they seem. Perhaps I learn the game from the cheesemonger. Have you considered that?
Illyrio does not play Syves.
No, thought the dwarf. He plays the Game of Thrones, and you and Griff and Duck are only pieces, to be moved where he will, and sacrificed at need, just as he sacrificed Viserys. The blame must fall on you, then. If I play badly, it is your doing. The half-maester chuckled.
Yellow, I shall miss you when the pirates cut your throat.
Where are these famous pirates? I'm beginning to think that you and Illyrio made them all up.
They are thickest on the stretch of river between Arnoy and the Sorrows. Above the ruins of Arnoy, the Corharic rule the river, and below the Sorrows, the galleys of Valentus hold sway. But neither city claims the waters in between, so the pirates have made it their own. Dagger Lake is full of islands where they lurk in hidden caves and secret strongholds. Are you ready?
For you? Oh, beyond a doubt. For the pirates, less so.
Holden removed the screen. Each of them contemplated the other's opening array. You are learning, the half-maester said. Tyrion almost grabbed his dragon, but thought better of it. Last game he had brought her out too soon, and lost her to a trebuchet.
If we do meet these fabled pirates, I may join up with them.
I'll tell them that my name is Hugo Halfmaester. He moved his light horse toward Holden's mountains. Holden answered with an elephant.
Hugo Halfwit would suit you better.
I only need half my wits to be a match for you. Tyrion moved up his heavy horse to support the light.
Perhaps you would care to wager on the outcome.
The half-maester arched an eyebrow.
How much? Well, I have no coin. We'll play for secrets.
Griff would cut my tongue out.
Afraid, are you? Oh, I would be if I were you.
The day you defeat me at Syvas will be the day turtles crawl out my arse. The half-maester moved his spears.
You have your wager, little man.
Tyrion stretched a hand out for his dragon. It was 3 hours later when the little man finally crept back up on deck to empty his bladder. Duck was helping Yandri wrestle down the sail, while Ysilla took the tiller. The sun hung low above the reed beds along the western bank as the wind began to gust and rip. I need that skin of wine, the dwarf thought. His legs were cramped from squatting on that stool, and he felt so light-headed that he was lucky not to fall into the river.
Yellow, Doc called. Where's Holden?
He's taken to his bed in some discomfort. There are turtles crawling out his ass. He left the night to sort that out and crawled up the ladder to the cabin roof. Off to the east, there was darkness gathering behind a rocky island. Septa Lamor found him there.
Can you feel the storms in the air, Hugo Hill? Dagger Lake is ahead of us, where pirates prowl, and beyond that lie the Sorrows.
And not mine. I carry mine own sorrows with me everywhere I go.
He thought of Tysha and wondered where whores go.
Why not Valantis? Perhaps I'll find her there. A man should cling to hope.
He wondered what he would say to her.
I am sorry that I let them rape you, love. I thought you were a whore. Can you find in your heart to forgive me?
I want to go back to our cottage, to the way it was when we were man and wife. The island fell away behind them. Tyrion saw ruins rising along the eastern bank, crooked walls and fallen towers, broken domes and rows of rotted wooden pillars, streets choked by mud and overgrown with purple moss. Another dead city, 10 times as large as Goyendro. Turtles live there now, big bone snappers. The dwarf could see them basking in the sun, brown and black hummocks with jagged ridges down the centres of their shells. A few saw the shy maid and slid down into the water, leaving ripples in their wake. This would not be a good place for a swim. Then, through the twisted, half-drawn trees and wide, wet streets, he glimpsed the silvery sheen of sunlight upon water. Another river? He knew at once, rushing towards the ruin. The ruins grew taller as the land grew narrower, until the city ended on a point of land where stood the remains of a colossal palace of pink and green marble, its collapsed domes and broken spires looming large above a row of covered archways. Tyrion saw more snappers sleeping in the slips, where half a hundred ships might once have docked. He knew where he was then.
That was Nymeria's palace, and this is all that remains of Nysar, her city.
"Yellow!" shouted Yandri, as the shy maid passed the point. "Tell me again of those Westerosi rivers, as big as Mother Rhoyne." "I did not know," he called back. "No river in the Seven Kingdoms is half so wide as this."
The new river that had joined them was a close twin to the one they had been sailing down, and that one alone had almost matched the Mander or the Trident.
"This is Nysar, where the mother gathers in her wild daughter Noin," said Yandri. "But she will not reach her widest point until she meets her other daughters. At Dagger Lake, the coin comes rushing in, the Darkland daughter full of gold and amber from the axe, and pine cones from the forest of Kohor. South of there, the mother meets Lerulu, the smiling daughter from the golden fields. Where they join, once stood Croyane, the festival city, where the streets were made of water and the houses made of gold. Then south and east again for long leagues until at last comes creeping in Selharu, the shy daughter who hides her course in reeds and rise. There Mother Rhoyne waxes so wide that a man upon a boat in the centre of the stream cannot see a shore to either side. Oh, you shall see, my little friend."
"I shall," the dwarf was thinking, when he spied a rippling ahead, not 6 yards from the boat. He was about to point it out to Lamor when it came to the surface with a wash of water that rocked the shy maid sideways. It was another turtle, a horned turtle of enormous size, its dark green shell mottled with brown and overgrown with water moss and crusty Black River mollusks. It raised its head and bellowed, a deep-throated, thrumming roar, louder than any war horn that Tyrion had ever heard.
"We are blessed,"
Ysilla was crying loudly, as tears streamed down her face.
"We are blessed! We are blessed!"
Duck was hooting, and young Griff too. Holden came out on deck to learn the cause of the commotion. But too late. The giant turtle had vanished below the water once again. "What was the cause of all that noise?" the half-maester asked.
"A turtle," said Tyrion. "A turtle bigger than this boat." "It was him," said Yantri, "the old man of the river."
"And why not?" Tyrion grinned. "Gods and wonders always appear to attend the birth of kings."